Storming out of the party after the argument had been a mistake. She should have demanded Nick drive her back to the dorms, except he was too drunk, too high, which explains why he acted like such an ass tonight. At the very least, she should have demanded he pay for an Uber ride. Joe would have ordered one had her debit card not hovered around zero. She needed to get away from Nick. He'd been acting strange the last week, on edge, angry, the smallest problem setting him off. His fury frightened her tonight and exposed her to Nick Bachman's dangerous side. How well does she know her boyfriend? Lightning flashes, illuminating the black clouds crawling toward Tremon Mills. She's trapped and alone, at the mercy of the elements, and the party is too far behind her. If she turns around, she'll never make it back to Nick's house before the storm hits. But there is a way out of this. This is an awful idea, she tells herself as she pulls the phone from her pocket. She promised herself she'd never make this call again. If he answers her distress call and picks her up in the dead of night, he'll expect more than a simple thank you. No, she won't lower herself to his level. Closing her contact list, she hurries down the pavement. Another raindrop splatters the blacktop. Heaven is about to unleash a cloudburst, and when it does, she'll be soaked to the bone. Just make the damn call, she chides herself. Don't overthink the issue. He answers on the first ring. His voice is smooth, calming.
I know the road well, he says. But it's dangerous territory, Joe. Stay where you are. I'll be there in 15 minutes.
Clutching her sweatshirt with a shiver, she pictures the inside of his Range Rover. Warm, safe. Though he'll bank on additional benefits as a price for this arrangement. Ending the call, she drops the phone into her pocket as if it's slicked with a disgusting film. Now she feels sleazy, manipulative. Her mother wouldn't approve, wouldn't recognize her. Standing along the shoulder, Joe bounces on her toes to stay warm, praying the rain holds off a little longer. Hurry, she wills her benefactor. As she waits, a footstep echoes along the road. Someone is back there, hiding in the shadows.
Dr. Jameson's there, next thing I know. And he gives Josie a shot of something for pain and infection, but he leaves the house shaking his head and saying sorry. And everybody's crying except for Pate, who's saying,
he'll be all right, he'll be all right, he'll be all...
Until the tears start choking him, too. That night we all sit around Josie's bed, just staring at him and talking to him in hushed voices like we're afraid to wake him. And one by one, the others leave to go to bed. But I stay there, because there ain't no way I'm leaving Josie's side. Not ever. Josie sleeps the whole next day, and Mama and Daddy take turns checking his pulse and his breathing, just to make sure. We all sit around and tell stories, every once in a while saying, "You remember that, Josie?" Like we think he's gonna answer. And we're saying, "You remember, don't you, Josie? Right, Josie? Come on, Josie." Until we're practically begging him to say something. And it gets to be so depressing I can't hardly stand to be in there. But can't stand the thought of leaving, neither. Then the third day he makes some grunting noises, like he's trying to talk. And we all take that as a real good sign. So we're smiling through our tears and patting him and trying to feed him some soup and tea. But he won't take nothing. And that night, when everyone else has gone to bed and I'm sitting there beside Josie, resting my head on the mattress next to his shoulder, he grunts. It startles me and I look up at him and he's got his head turned and he's looking at me with his one good eye, the one that ain't clouded over. Looking me right in the eye. And I look at his eyes that don't look like mine no more. And he whispers,
Junie.
It's hard to understand him because his mouth is all busted up and he's weak, so weak. But I know he said my name. I lean closer to him, my ear right up next to his mouth so I can hear him. And he rasps,
take care of Mama and Daddy.
And then he ain't breathing no more.
Old Lady Ketchell lived in a small, run-down, one-story, white clapboard house on Tailings Way. The house had four windows in the front, two on each side of the front door that stood under a makeshift sheet metal awning attached amateurishly to the roof. The windows were notable only because they were frequently broken, the result of mischievous kids who dared to fling rocks at the house from the sidewalk. The stones that missed their mark left the clapboards pockmarked and cracked. No one befriended her, but virtually everyone in town knew of her. While her house displayed damage and disrepair, she was unusually obsessed with the pathways within the bounds of her property. She was that crazy lady that swept her walkway, the sidewalk, and the street in front of her house. Not only occasionally, but every day, and sometimes twice. And she swept them with such vigor and urgency, you would think she was trying to sweep away something toxic. She even swept them in the winter until the snow became too deep, and then she seemed to go into hibernation, giving the community and the school kids a reprieve from her daily attacks. She always wore the same thing, an old, faded floral print house dress with brown leather boots that looked like vintage army boots. Her gray hair was pulled back severely to a bun, which stretched the thin skin on her face to such an extent as to make her look positively skeletal. Her piercing blue eyes behind wireframe spectacles would have been stunning on anyone else, but deeply disturbing on her. And she was never seen without that corn bristle broom that she wielded like a weapon when she wasn't using it for its intended purpose. While she looked skinny and frail, she was remarkably spry and quick. Just ask the school kids who dared walk past her house. More than a few had been whacked by that broom and narrowly escaped her clutches. Those who did get close enough to her claimed she had an earthy, death-like smell, contributing to a rumor that her home had dirt floors. Unlike everyone else in town, who had the need to regularly pick up groceries or supplies, Old Lady Ketchell never did. She never strayed beyond the street in front of her home or beyond the boundaries of her property. Someone once said that she lived off eating dirt, bugs, rodents, and dead bodies, and somehow that rumor stuck. This, in turn, fueled the nightmares and fears that every school child had of being caught by Old Lady Ketchell.